Welcome, welcome, welcome to the SubPub Podcast. I'm MK Sullivan.
And I'm Danny Moreno. And on today's episode, we have Francesco Pupi. He is a trail runner for Nike based in Como, Italy. He's also just like an all-around advocate for the health and future of the sport, current state of the sport, with heavy involvement. He was also the founding member or a founding member of PTRA, and he's heavily involved in Vert.Run.
Yes, and he does have his own podcast through Vert.Run. So if you have never listened to Francesco's podcast, he does a very good job of like covering not only athletes in the sport, but like the way that they train and the way that he trains people, which is a lot of fun. But recently, he won the Chuckanut 50K, breaking the previous course record. He and Matt Daniels battled it out for the entirety of the race, but Francesco ultimately came out on top. Up next in Francesco's Tour de American West, he will be racing the Lake Sonoma 50 miler, which is another iconic early season race here in the US. We discuss a little bit about altitude training last year versus this year and what he learned and changed. The difference between American and European races, especially comparing something like Chuckanut 50K to the all-out theatrics of Sierra Zinal, his time between Sierra Zinal and OCC last year, and why he thinks that he had the day that he did at OCC, and plenty more.
Yeah, Francesco is just like a trail running treasure. I think Everyone can say that they are a fan of Francesco. And if you don't already, follow him on Instagram at francesco.poopy. And yeah, enjoy our conversation with him.
Hey, Francesco, welcome to the pod. Welcome back to the pod.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
It's nice to have you on for a full episode this time.
Yeah, exactly. Last time it was like just for a little Sierra Zinal preview. This time we'll get to chat more extensively.
Yeah, we're definitely excited to have you. Before we jump in, which we are going to kind of bring it back a little bit to that transition period between Sierra Zinal and OCC. But first off, where are you right now? Can you tell the folks what's going on currently?
Yeah, of course. So right now I'm in Boulder, actually outside of Boulder in Superior, in an apartment that was kindly offered to me by Matt Daniels, a good friend of mine, and of course, good competitors. We had such a good race at Chuckanut this year. So I'm here for a few days until I travel to California for Lake Sonoma. And yeah, I'm enjoying the high life in Boulder, training and just doing all my things from here, hanging out with people in Boulder and meeting some new people sometimes. So it's been really good last couple of weeks.
Why did you choose to go to Boulder instead of staying on the West Coast, since that's where your two races were?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I wanted a location that was maybe at altitude, but not too high. So maybe not as high as, say, Mammoth Lakes. Because I think I don't always react really well to altitude. So I thought Boulder would be like convenient. And also because I've got some friends here and I knew I was going to have some company for my sessions. I know the trails, I've been here before. So I also kind of wanted to be back. Last time I was here was 2019. So I just got a chance to come and visit some people, some friends, and stay here for basically 18 days in between my time in Washington for Chuckanut and my next race, which is going to be Lake Sonoma 50.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's a good choice altitude-wise. How has that transition been? Did you feel it for a couple of days, and are you fully acclimated at this point?
Yeah, so as I was mentioning, I don't think I really absorb or react very, very well to altitude. It's definitely taken me a while. And I think you also have to consider, you know, the recovery from the race, which has been not the smoothest because Chuckanut took so much out of me. The change in weather, when I was on the West Coast, it was like sunny and like spring weather. I came here, it was like in the 20s, snowing. So it was like a a big change for me. And then, just the acclimatization for me takes maybe a week or so. So yeah, I've been doing some workouts. Sometimes you don't see the numbers that you wish to see on the GPS, but you just try to go, by feel, listening to your body and just knowing what's good for you. I think it's about being smart and not pushing yourself too much because it's easy at altitude to burn yourself. So I've been, running a high mileage, but not really pushing too much, which has been good. And then I've been hitting the gym on a weekly basis, so that has been a consistent part of my training, and I think it's a key aspect in between two races, where you can't really do too much in terms of high intensity, but you still need to maintain some qualities that allow you to basically maintain your fitness. So that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. The transitioning to altitude training is really hard. And I think a lot of people get consumed with the romantic idea of, oh, I'm going to go to altitude, I'm going to come out super fit. But it is truly about balancing your energy systems and really like putting your pace ego aside and going off of like what feels good heart rate wise. I didn't move to altitude until 3 years ago. I'd always lived at sea level, negative sea level, always on the coast of California. And moving there, like I really had to just strip everything that I knew of when it came to training. And it took a really, really long time for me to finally like even get close to my paces and then extending even like those really long threshold runs and tempos took like years. Honestly, it took like 2 to 3 years. So it's really good to hear that, you're going more based off of feeling. You also had an altitude stint before Sierra's and now last year. And so
Yeah,
I'm
I was about to
curious
say.
what lessons learned, from that stint did you bring into this time that you are now?
Yeah, I was about to say the last time we were chatting, I was also in an altitude training camp back in Italy. So, kind of nice to be in the same situation. Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, altitude is tricky and it's different for everyone, I think. Like how you react to altitude training is very different from person to person. And as I mentioned, for me, I don't think I'm like the quickest person to adapt or the person, the athlete that absorbs altitude training the best way possible. Still, I think it's beneficial for me. I think I can get something positive out of it. And a lot of time it's like, for example, when I go on an altitude training camp in the summer in Italy, it's maybe more to escape the summer heat from where I live. And also, like, you know that you're doing an altitude training camp, so like you're resting more, training more, eating better food, just taking care of yourself. It's like more about the mindset than for the benefit that you get from altitude itself. So like it's hard to say what is the cause and what is the effect, as with everything in training, because it's just a process. It's a holistic process that we go through, which hopefully brings us some benefits or like the results that we wish. But over different altitude training camps that I've done, I think I've learned, yeah, one thing that you mentioned, like to put your ego aside, just not look at, not bother too much about looking at your GPS or watch, go based on feel and heart rate. I think during the first days of an altitude training camp, it's good to wear a heart rate monitor because I think the perceived exertion is maybe like a little lower for how high your heart rate is working. Like say I'm going out for an easy run and I'm easily in around 150 beats per minute, which for me is maybe mid zone two. So like still in the easy range, but maybe not as easy as like zone one. So I have to be careful. And if I look at my heart rate, I can make a conscious decision to slow down. While if I don't, yeah, maybe it feels like, yeah, kind of good, but actually it's like too hard. So, just all these little things. And then I could really relate when you mentioned that threshold feels hard, like the longer intervals, everything, yeah, basically around threshold pace becomes way harder. So I think especially for the first days of an altitude training camp, it's good to either run very slow, so definitely beyond the sorry, below the first threshold, so like zone one and zone two, or really fast but for short periods of time, so like VO2 max, like short intervals and intensity. I think you can do that without cooking yourself, and it's probably good for adaptation. So even just even just a few strides after an easy run, or a few 200s on the track, a sets of uphill sprints, I think can be good during the first phase of your altitude training. But then with threshold, you need to be more careful and maybe let a few days go by before you start doing it.
Yeah, it's crazy how like altitude is so different for every athlete out there. Like I've lived at altitude for 12 years now. And I've been running, for since I was like 10. My husband, on the other hand, has lived at altitude basically his whole life. Didn't start running until like 5, 6 years ago, and he's so much more adapted than I am just because he lived here his whole life, even though I've been training here for longer. It's another like little thing that I find interesting about altitude is that I used to think that I recovered really well because I was like able to do workouts like more frequently than other people. And then I lived at sea, like not at sea level, but much lower for a shorter period of time. And I realized that I just actually wasn't able to run as hard as I thought I was. Like I recovered less quickly at sea level because I could run harder. So it's like there's so
Interesting.
many different nuances and it depends on the person. And yeah, I think the most important part is just be patient with yourself. Don't get too frustrated with the fact that you maybe feel like shit for a while. And I think, yeah, heart rate monitors are really helpful
Yeah,
at
it's a
altitude.
good proxy. It's not
Yeah.
perfect, but it's probably the best proxy that we have to monitor intensity. And then like looking at what some people here are doing, like it's pretty insane. So like comparing myself to what other people are doing, it's maybe not necessary. Like, yeah, some people are like crushing workouts and long runs and tempos and anything, but they may have been living here for years, so they are much more adapted than me. And you can see how that truly makes a difference. So, yeah, like putting aside the comparison game as always.
Yeah, definitely. And, when it all comes down to it, it's like who recovered the best, in my opinion, like when you're lining up to the start, regardless of where you live. Having just been down in Auburn, all of my runs were much faster than I run at home. And I, like, even though I was lower, I had to recover a lot more because my body just wasn't used to that consistent frequency. And then now coming back at altitude, I was actually happy that I can run slower again, and get some benefits from that. So yeah, it's super interesting. One last thing I just wanted to highlight because I think it's really powerful that you noted on this was the training camp environment. And again, going back just to wrap up this altitude section is like a lot of people have this romanticized vision of altitude training camps and like, oh, I need to go to altitude to be the athlete. Best athlete I can be. And yeah, there's some of that for sure. But a lot of that training camp mentality is actually where you get the benefit from is having that hyper intention, hyper focus, doing all the things very much like in line with just your sport. And having that for a 2, 3, 4 week period can really make like a whole part of your season that much better. And so, yeah, just for people who may not have the time to go to altitude or have access to altitude, like creating that environment where you live just to be like super hyper focused for a short period of time, I think can be just as beneficial. So yeah, just wanted to highlight that as well.
Yeah, so.
So kind of going back to last year, the last time we talked to you, obviously, you're also at altitude training camp. You went to, or an altitude stint, you went to Sierra Zinal. Things didn't quite line up on that day. And then you had kind of this lull period, which I've also experienced between Sierra Zinal and OCC. And so I'm just curious, like, what you did during that time, because then you showed up just a couple weeks later and placed second on the day in, arguably one of the biggest races in our sport, adjacent to maybe the World Championships. And so yeah, I just want to know like what your thought process was and like what that self-building looked like during that time.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the answer will not be a very conventional one. actually, I just went on vacation after Sierra Zinal. We had planned a short vac like actually my girlfriend works a full-time job, so the only couple of weeks that she really gets off from work are those 2 central weeks in August. So after Sierra Zinal, we were planning to travel a little bit with our van and our bikes. So we went to Belgium and just rode our bikes in Belgium. We were like on the cobbles, on the Tour of Flanders, and like pretending to be professional cyclists over there. And just, yeah, I think mainly recovering mentally and physically. Didn't run that much. I mean, I still ran, but I was mostly running with my girlfriend. So nothing special, nothing too hard. Sierra Zinal was obviously a big disappointment, but like this year I may do things differently. I don't know. I think that period in between Sierra Zinal and OCC really served me to just focus on my physical and mental recovery. I can only remember a couple of hard sessions that I did, like maybe 10, 7 days before OCC. And I think it was just about showing up to OCC in Chamonix as fresh as possible and as ready to run as possible and as willing to suffer as possible. If you're not in a good mental place to accept the pain that comes from a high level competition, I think it's pretty unrealistic to hope that you can perform at your highest level because it does require a huge amount of pain and effort. That's a reality, at least for me. I think also the mindset towards the race changed because Sierra Zinal is like not too short, but like 2.5 hour, like very intense from the start. Going into OCC, I knew that it was a little more about strategy and being smart and, planning the refreshments, aid stations, pacing myself a little more. Like you're not all out from the start. So personally, I find that easier when I can like play a little bit with intensity instead of like going out full gas. And yeah, maybe I overtrained in the training camp that I did before Sierra Zinal. I can definitely make mistakes and I just try to learn from them. So I don't know if this answered your question, but yeah, it was like mainly about recovering and just being in a good physical and mental space to show up and do my best at OCC.
I think it's interesting that you said like you have to be ready to like be in a good amount of pain to like do well in these races, because I think a lot like a mistake that a lot of athletes make whether they're an elite athlete or they're like a mid to backpacker, is like, oh, if I train really hard for this, like then racing won't be that hard. But like racing is so hard. You have to be ready to go to the well to like do or like reach your goals, do well in the race, whatever those happen to be. And I'm kind of a totally different question now, but do you think that the altitude camp was too close, or do you think that you overtrained? Like, I'm wondering where you think that
So,
balance was.
yeah, good question. So, I think it was good. Maybe I overtrained a little bit in the last week of my 3 week training camp. I think what really stresses me out was that I developed a little foot injury. Like I was starting to feel some pain at my left foot by the end of the training camp and when I went back home. And that was like quite stressful to deal with so close to the race because like I thought I needed to, maintain some fitness, not really take time off. But at the same time, my foot was hurting and I was doing like therapy with my physio and, trying to fix the issue. So like both physically and mentally, it wasn't the easiest situation to deal with. And I think, I mean, it's not the only reason for sure, but it definitely played a factor in the way I faced the race, both physically and mentally. And then like I remember the week before Serzinal, I took a few days off. Maybe I was just cycling. And then I did a workout where I probably pushed too hard. Like it wasn't a not like it was nothing special, like a 30-minute fartlek, something like that. But like I just wanted to prove myself and see some numbers on my watch, and of course that wasn't a smart decision. Like it's pretty incredible to me how tight that balance is. Like if you just burn a little bit of your best energies that you can spend in a competition, then the competition like doesn't end up feeling like it never feels good, but it ends up not being as good as you would hope for, or like as your training would indicate maybe. So like I don't know. I think accepting the fact that you can do less than what you wanted, like less than what your training plan mentioned or what you had planned to do. For a lot of athletes, myself included, it's really hard. So it takes a lot of courage, like self-confidence, not to prove yourself, not to like to say no. I just need to go and do 1 hour of mobility instead of this double, instead of this workout. I just need to take a rest day instead of having this workout that is not going to make any difference for my fitness, to be honest. But even if you know that, like you're consciously aware about it, I still find it really hard to do it in practice.
I completely understand that as a coach who tells people to we've had this conversation before about telling athletes to chill
I
out but
mean,
not being
slowing
able to do
down,
it.
yeah. Both in terms of how hard you're pushing during your training and in the decision regarding whether you should train or not, it's one of the things that I find the hardest in training.
Because to me, it almost sounds like maybe you overtrained a little bit, but it seems like your brain was overtrained more than anything else. Like taking that time off between Sears and all and OCC to just like be on vacation and, having all that stress leading up to Sears and all, like those are two completely different brain spaces. And you had a way better day at OCC. So you just needed to like step back mentally more than physically almost.
Yeah, it's true. Then yeah, I mean, OCC was my first experience. Serzinal was my seventh time. There is a different emotional in Boldmont, in the two races. Because in one, in Sarzenal, I was perfectly aware what I was signed up to and what I needed to do to perform well. In OCC, it was like more about the experience, like just trying to see what I could do on the day. And I think going into a race with a spirit of discovery and like putting focus not much on the result, but on more on the process, like process as intended as like the attitude that you go towards the race. Or like you can have goals for a race that are not like result oriented, but are more like process oriented. Like, I don't know, I want to go out hard, or like I want to finish strong, or like I want to like really focus on my nutrition, whatever. So for me, it was a lot more about that instead of like wanting to like perform or like putting a number on the result on the time that I was going to finish the race.
Yeah, I think I also have experienced that double, the Sierrazenal OCC double. I think a lot of athletes have experienced that double, whether they do OCC or something else. And it's hard. Like, I honestly, the only other big world event I could think where you have such world-class events that close together is maybe the Olympics, and that's even a shorter time span, and that's almost a luxury. You're like, well, I have to shut my brain off because I race again in 2 days. Whereas this one, I think what's really tricky about it is you do have time to either do what you did and just be like, I'm just gonna shut it out completely, and I'll sh revisit it in a couple weeks and be excited and go to the pain cave again. Or I imagine there are some people that just sit with potentially a disappointing race and just like soak in it for 2 weeks, which that can go the opposite way. So I think it is like a very fascinating and intriguing double for that reason for many people. And yeah,
I
I
agree.
just you had an incredible race at OCC, which was, yeah, that was a huge race on the day. So congrats for
Thanks.
coming out on the other end of that. It's a
Thanks.
great feeling.
Yeah, it's like even after what happened, with Stian and that situation, which I don't want to get into, it still feels like a special day where I was able to give my best, and this is all that matters to me. And then, yeah, we can talk about CN, or like, I think the result is going to be changed after, the anti-doping will make their the anti-doping system will make their final decision on that front. And I also like try not to think what I could maybe have experienced if the race had gone differently. But yeah, all in all, it was like a pretty special day, and I felt like I was able to give my best to that competition. So at a personal level, it's what matters the most. So I'm, yeah, pretty happy about it.
You should be. I love like the Antonio V. Francesco sprint finish
Oh my
story.
gosh. Yeah, like that descent, I think I ran one of my best descents in my life, and Antonio was still able to like close the gap on me because he ran like an insane descent. And then in the last 800 meters, for people who've been in Chamonix, there is like a little bridge that goes over a road, and then it's basically like half a mile until the finish. And literally, like when I was climbing down the stairs of that bridge, Antonio was climbing up. And after 55K, when you just want to finish and like relax, the feeling of being chased is like, I wouldn't wish it to my best enemy.
That's like a literal nightmare of
Nightmare, yeah.
like being on the bridge the same time as someone else, but at the same time, like you have to be so proud of yourself. And I'm sure he's proud of himself too, because you are probably able to pull out so much of yourself that much more because he was there. And that's the spirit of the sport right there. It's like,
Yeah.
that's why we do it. Like, even if
Totally.
he had edged you out, you left everything out there. And that to me is just like, you can't help but not feel like like you won, he won. Just like, it's such an incredible feeling. So to have him do that and vice versa for each other, that kind of bonds you for life, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've felt that connection in with like some of my competitors in some of the races that I've done. Not many, to be honest, because it doesn't happen that often that someone pushes you to your absolute limits. It's maybe happened at Chuckanut, for example, with Matt Daniels. It was funny because we never really ran together. Like we never ran side to side in the whole race. Yet it felt like I was running with Matt the whole time.
You could feel him.
That's crazy. Like, yeah, it was very special.
Yeah, I remember seeing that bridge like when I was previewing the course, and I was like, I had that thought. I was like, this would be a nightmare if I was on one side and somebody was on the other. But it's great. You guys are both really fast. I'm sure it was fun, even though it felt terrible.
Just to put some numbers, and I know that Antonio is like a 150 something 800 meter runner,
I did
and
not know
I'm
that.
definitely not that fast. So like I'm fast for trail running standards,
Yeah.
but not as fast as like a 152 PR in the 800.
That's
So I
pretty
was
cool.
like definitely very scared.
Yeah,
Like the
that's.
last person you wanted to be there. Yeah,
Yep.
exactly.
Yep.
But yeah, anyway, it was a good race. I was very proud of my last climb up to La Flégère. I think there was someone tweeting. I mean, someone told me after the race that someone was tweeting that Stian had just run the fastest time on that uphill. And after I went through La Flégère, I think I lowered that time by more than a minute. So it was like a really, really, really good climb at the end of the 50K. After, 2,500 meters of climbing already in my legs, so I feel these are the moments where I'm really able to give my best. Like, I may not be as competitive as I used to be on like a single short climb, but in terms of durability, I think I've developed a very strong engine, and yeah, it's showing at the end of races. Now I think one of the goals that I've had for this year is to bring back the high gear that allows me to really go out hard in races like Serrazinal or like even shorter races and run really fast, really hard for a short period of time.
That's awesome. And then you like completely transition your season and you choose a 50 miler. And we'll talk about the US races here pretty
Yeah.
soon, but why did you choose to participate in Les Templiers instead of Golden Trail World Series final?
Yeah. So you mentioned it was like a transition. To me, it felt like a more natural concept, like end of my season. Like the whole season was planned with the idea to run longer than I had ever run before. So like I mostly focus on races around 4 or 5 hours, including, for example, the 50K at Lavaredo that I won, the World Championship, where I was sixth, and it was a 4.5 hours race, Zagama, which was still a 4 hour race for me. So I really wanted to try a longer distance by the end of the season. And Templier felt like the most logical choice for me, both from like a logistics standpoint and like in terms of like course and just history and prestige and calendar also. So actually in between OCC, which was end of August, and Templier, which was at the end of October. I also tried to compete in the Golden Trail Series. I came here to the US for Pikes Peak Ascent and Mammoth Trail Fest, which ended up very poorly. I think I was a little over, like a little too ambitious, and overestimated my recovery capacities after OCC. And also probably didn't focus enough on my recovery after OCC. I was obviously pretty, pretty happy and motivated to train, to like when I think when a race proves that you're fit, you're right there when you where you want to be. It's easy to get caught up in doing too much. And it's easy to be motivated to train, of course, much more than when a race goes badly. And an example is Sersenal. So I was maybe doing too much, and then there was like the international travel, the very short time in between OCC and Pikes Peak Ascent, but it just ended up not being a good race. I finished outside the top 20. Then I got sick, didn't even race in Mammoth. I was there, but not running, not racing. I was like just filming, witnessing Danny's second place finish, which was really good. So like that was definitely disappointing, but it was probably also the much needed break that I needed to like restart a new training cycle, go back home, reestablish myself, and just turn the page and setting my sight on really the last goal of the season. So I got back from the US, I think it was early October or maybe end of September, just in time for a couple of long runs and a couple of good workouts. I actually felt really good in those couple of weeks before Templier. So going into the race, I was, feeling confident, and I was very motivated by the challenge of running farther than I had ever run before, and trying a new experience against new athletes, and just challenging myself on a course that seemed to be really interesting, and that could probably suit me really well. And it ended up being a very good experience because I was second behind Jonathan Alban. I felt like I was able to put in a very good effort in that race. Not everything went perfectly, but there was a lot of learning for sure. And yeah, considering it was my first 50 miler, the result was definitely rewarding. My time was definitely good, a good time. The course has changed a little bit over the years, but not that much. So like comparing myself with some of the others who have challenged themselves on that course was also pretty satisfying.
How much has the course changed? Is it shorter or longer now?
Like it's always between like 78K and 82K, looks so like
Gotcha.
49 and 51 miles basically. But like to be honest, I don't really know. I know that for example, the time, so Jonathan Alban, who won last year, that was his second win, and the first time he won, he ran a faster time, but of course was also a little different and a little shorter. So you can't really compare those two performances. But I think we could compare with what Jim Walmsley had run the year before. I think the course was exactly the same, and we actually ran faster than Jim on that course. Probably because like with John, me and Ben Diemen, who was third, We were like constantly pushing ourselves, and there was never a moment during the race where I could like not like take a break, but
Let
like
off the gas.
relax a little bit. Yeah, I was like always pushing, and like it honestly felt like a very fast race considering it was like almost 7 hours and 50 miles. But like, I don't know, when you're running well below sub 6 minute miles, flat,
Holy moly,
in the
that's so
first
fast.
hour of the race, and it's dark, and you know it's some trails, you have your last lamp. I mean, you know that you're running pretty hard.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that was a good experience and a good performance. And yeah, honestly, John, yeah, he's always been one of my best competitors. I've managed to beat him a few times, but he's probably beat more than he's probably been in front of me more than I was able to be in front of him. But yeah, it was a very good day for both of us.
That's awesome. Yeah, it looked like an incredible day. And just as someone who has had an eye on that race for a couple years now, yeah, it just looks like an incredible race,
It's pretty
energy
amazing, yeah.
wise,
Yeah, it's a
just the
huge
fans and
event.
stuff.
It's like a proper trail running festival.
Yeah.
There are like 10, or I think last year it was 11,000
Holy moly.
participants.
What?
So a huge race, like huge event, probably like the size of UTMB. Just maybe not as famous, but it's still very famous in France. And that race has got an interesting history because like the race director actually got inspiration to organize the Grand Trail de Templier from when he raced the Leadville 100 back in the early 90s. I think this year the race was last year Templier was at the 30th edition, so the race has been on since the early 90s basically. And I think it's a course that American runners would do really well and would really appreciate.
So runnable.
And yeah, it's pretty runnable, but it's still like technical and slow in some sections. Like there is a lot of fast running, but I think you'd be surprised to see how technical some sections are, and how fast the times really are on that course, considering that there's still quite a bit of climbing. But like as Europeans, we don't get as many races that are like US style, quote unquote. We're used to like alpine races with a huge elevation to distance ratio. So for me to run something runnable that felt fast, was, yeah, a lot of fun.
This episode is brought to you by our friends at NeverSecond. NeverSecond uses a modular system that allows you to create the exact carbohydrate formula for your need and activity. Their products are meant to be mixed and matched so that you can have 30, 60, 90, or even 120 grams of carbs per hour. As a professional athlete, I was introduced to NeverSecond about a year ago after a rough race at the Mont Blanc Marathon. I was trying to take in gels that required a lot of water, but without a crew and the fact that there weren't enough aid stations to adequately match my intake, it became quite the struggle of a day. After that experience, I started using NeverSecond in training because their liquid gels weren't as sticky and require less water and are much easier to get down, making my race day and training nutrition immediately more successful and simple. And if you want to try NeverSecond, just head to neversecond.com. NEVER number 2.com and use code SUBHUB25 for a 25% discount on all of your orders.
Well, that's a perfect segue. Speaking of the American trail running scene, you just came off a win and course record at Chuckanut. And obviously, you liked your experience at Lake Tremblay because next up, you have an American classic 50 miler, Lake Sonoma. And yeah, what made you decide to come to the US? Has this been something that's been on your mind for a bit? Obviously, you've done Golden Trail races, but These are two races I would say are very much are like American iconic races. They're not so world renowned. So yeah, how'd they get on your radar? What made you decide? Was this short term or have you been thinking about this for a while?
Yeah, it's true that I kind of went from European American style race to a proper American, very traditional event like chucking it. There was some racing in between, but like not trail racing, actually some cross country and road racing this winter. But yeah, I've been very intentional with my decision to come here to the US and race at Chuckanut and Lake Sonoma. Because as a student of the sport, I like to learn about the history and what has really contributed to the growth, the expansion, the community here in the US. And I think the Pacific Northwest has played a special role in it. Like the ultra running scene that developed around Portland, Seattle, and the Pacific Northwest, races like Chuckanut. Yeah, I think they've done a lot for the sport. And I don't know, I just wanted to experience this atmosphere. Maybe be like the first high level European athlete to come here and confront myself with the best of the sport that America had to offer. I don't think any other European runner had ever run a Chuckanut, for example. So I was like going through the top times, I think the top 30 list that is available on the website. And, to see the names like Haddon Ox or Max King, Adam Peterman, David Laney, all these people that are like, yeah, legends, like, or like really famous people for me, people that I definitely respect and look up to. The idea of challenging myself, and maybe putting my names among those people was interesting. And then I just wanted to experience a different style of competition than what you can find in Europe, where there is definitely more organization. Races are like, races generally feel like more professional just because they have like a bigger, more complicated logistic. Yeah, like just more going on. It's not like Chuckanut just felt like yeah, very grassroots event and just, a bunch of people gathering together to run in the forest. And it didn't even feel like a race until 15 minutes from the start. Or like just small things like the fact that there is not even an official prize ceremony, for example. The race director comes to you and gives you the prize after the finish, and that's it. You just go to the party, to the after party if you want to. Then if not, like you're free. And then like of course there is also the aspect that I wanted to see and experience and run. On the Pacific Northwest trails. And I think trails at Chuckanut are really, really nice, like some of the best trails I've ever been on. And knowing that I like fast running and races that are like relatively runnable. Some people would hate a course like Chuckanut, some people that, some European runners for sure. But I really like it. I really like the fact that you can run fast on some section of the course and there is not a whole lot of climbing. Yeah, to me it felt very interesting and that's why I wanted to come and do these races.
I think it's funny talking about like grassroots, feeling like it's not a race until you get to the start line, because I think that might be why it's such a big deal for Americans to go over to Europe to race, is like sometimes it's almost too much for us. Like, if you're not used to that level of hype, like, we don't really have trail running festivals. Like, maybe the closest thing is Broken Arrow, but even if you're running Western States, which is one of the biggest races in the world, I mean, you show up and it's like extremely chill. Like, there's not really an expo beforehand. People are just kind of walking around before the start line, and then it's like, okay, we're going. We're running up, Palisades. And so I think it can be a little bit much for some American runners to go over to Europe because it's such a different environment.
Yeah, true. It's just a different experience, and I like to experience different things in the sport, not just in terms of, distances, but also like atmosphere, vibes, culture, tradition, community. I think so. We talk a lot about community, but having experienced the scene both here in the US and in Europe, I think the only trail running scene that we can really refer to as a community is the American trail running scene, because in Europe everything is much more fragmented, and of course like there is the language barrier between different countries that is huge, but like I think here there is a feeling of responsibility towards the community and a feeling of belonging, and also like some, like, I don't know, ongoing discussions or things that people generally share and understand, which is really cool. For example, it's hard for me to describe, because I lack the words, or maybe like someone who is so immersed in this community and culture doesn't really get it, but coming from Europe and experiencing all of it is pretty special. Also, you were talking about like American runners being a little intimidated by European races, and like these races almost feeling like too big. I was reflecting on the professionalism in the sport here in the US and in Europe. I think, like, for some reasons here, the sport is more professional. Like, there are probably better opportunities for athletes, and not just athletes, like, everyone who wants to get involved in the sport, or like race directors, or like media, just a lot of people who work or like gravitate around the sport. While in, but like you lack some of the organization and institutionalization, that we have in Europe. Like, I don't know, like it's hard to describe, but in terms of things that like athletes here do, or like how do you approach the sport, they might be like less professionals than some European athletes, but it's like because the opportunities are just different. And again, it's hard for me to express. Just yesterday, I was writing something about it on Instagram. So for people who want to read my thoughts, I think it's much better to to open my post. But I find it really interesting and fascinating to reflect on those differences, and like hopefully learn from each other. And for me, I just feel really lucky that I'm able to experience all of these, and I'm feeling really grateful that I'm here and, expanding my views and my horizons and meeting new people, I think can be a very enriching opportunity.
Yeah, I think a big just like barrier that we run into in the US is it's so much harder to get permitting for races. Like, these races in Europe are, it, I mean, I'm not a race director there, so I don't know, but It seems to be fairly easy. Like there's
Yes.
so many races every single weekend. Whereas in the US, you have to focus on less races because there's only so many opportunities.
Yes.
Because, yeah, I mean, it's so hard to get a permit for a race in this country.
Yeah.
Like you have to
Yeah, and
go through
in
so
Europe,
much. Yeah.
like you can pretty much organize a race anywhere. And for sure in some of the best places, like some of the most beautiful places in the Alps, for example, Mont Blanc, the Dolomites, places like that. Here in the US, some of the best places are protected by, you know, our national parks or wilderness areas where you can't get a permit to organize a trail race. So for example, this is a reason why the FKT movement is so developed compared to Europe. There would be like no apparent reason for a European runner to like go after an FKT, because
There's probably
if
a
there was
race.
a trail, there is probably a race there, you know. So
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, I think we should move on to Sonoma and just like the transition from Chuckanut to Sonoma, because we've kind of talked a little bit. You're in Boulder right now. You're doing some altitude training. But do you feel like you've done anything different between Chuckanut and Lake Sonoma? Compared to like maybe what you were doing before Les Templiers back in the fall.
Sure. Yeah, it's been a different approach because it's a different stage of my season. At Templiers, I knew Templiers was going to be my last race of the season. I already had a lot of workouts and miles and long runs and races in my legs. Here, I'm still like relatively fresh. I'm doing an altitude training camp, so like the circumstances are definitely different. To be honest, I think with my coach, we've been focusing on two aspects in between Chuckanut and Lake Sonoma. First is obviously recovery and adapting to altitude, like making sure I run as efficiently as possible and I completely recover from my effort at Chuckanut. And the second thing is really focusing on strength training, which I think it allows me to maintain a good fitness while not training or like pushing myself too much in workouts. Obviously, I didn't really need any. Like, since between Chuckanut and Lake Sonoma, I only had like 4 weeks. There is not a whole lot that you can do in 4 weeks, considering that you have to recover and then taper for the other race. So there was like basically room for just one long run, which was for those of you who know, the Gold Hill Loop in Boulder is like a pretty popular route. Winter route, actually, mostly on dirt roads. And I did that with Matt Daniels and Moises Jimenez last Saturday. It was like a 2 hour, 45 minute effort, and like 23 miles, I think. So a pretty good effort. But that was the only like session that was meant to like prepare my race at Lake Sonoma. Everything else that we did was more like maintenance, and I'm actually already thinking about my next goal for two reasons. One, because it's like I feel like at Lake Sonoma I just need to go there and run and like do my thing, because there's not much that I can do to like increase my fitness or get better. I think the most specific session that I could ever do for Lake Sonoma was actually Chuckanut, obviously. But so I'm gonna try to do this experiment that is gonna test my recovery capacities, and it's really gonna challenge myself in something very different from the race at Lake Sonoma. because I'm signed up to the Italian uphill trials for the European Championship in the uphill race. So like the vertical race, which is gonna be like a probably like a 45-minute effort, only uphill, which will hopefully qualify me for the European Championship, which is gonna take place in Annecy at the end of May. The problem is that the timing is really tight. The trials is only 12 days after Lake Sonoma. So this is why I said it's an experiment. I want to see how I come out from Lake Sonoma and how I can recover, considering that there is also an international travel with a 9-hour time difference in between the two races. So that's going to play a big factor. But yeah, I just want to see, how I do, and hopefully it'll turn out to be a good experiment. Maybe not. But I think I'm excited to test myself, and yeah, just see what happens.
That is so fun. Sounds painful, but
So
it
like
sounds
that's why
fun.
I was mentioning like. Yeah, I'm thinking about Lake Sonoma, but I'm actually thinking ahead. And I think what I can do right now goes more towards this short race that I'm going to do after Lake Sonoma than towards Lake Sonoma itself. Not because Lake Sonoma is going to be easier, but
It's
if
just a
it's like
lower
the
intensity.
preparation that I've done was carried out in the months and weeks before, so.
Definitely.
Yeah. I am curious, like, are you aware of how fast people have run at Lake Sonoma? And obviously you just got the course record at Chuckanut, which was great. And I'm just curious if you truly are going in with like no expectations or, shooting for that sub six mark that Jim put up in, I believe it was
I think it's
2018.
sub 6.
Yeah, 551. And that was the year that he then ran 1430 at Western. So not quite the newest, but quite a big year for him. Yeah.
So the course has changed a little bit. I think the start has moved back, so it's actually a little longer, and it's actually listed as 51 miles this year. So I don't know if the time can really compare, but yeah, I've definitely seen that time. It's definitely caught my attention, and as someone who wants to confront with the best of the sport, it's definitely been in my thoughts a lot in training and not just in training. I don't know. I'll see how the day is gonna play out. There is for sure, like I don't want to underestimate the race, of course, and my competitors, but if I can be somewhat conservative, I think it'll be very positive for the race that I have just 12 days after Lake Sonoma. Because obviously, like going to the well another time is just gonna increase the time that I need to recover. So I don't know, like if swimming is like really, if the race is gonna be like very challenging, like a Chuckanut and we run fast, then yeah, of course I will try to go for a fast time and possibly the record. It would be a lot of fun. If the pace will be a little more relaxed, I think I'm not gonna be the one who is gonna really like force the pace, if that makes
Because that's
sense.
a quick turnaround.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah, I have
that's,
to
I love
like
that.
keep everything in balance and just trying to be smart. But yeah, one day or the other, I think I will try to give myself like the best shot at chasing like some of Jim's records.
Might
It's
as
fun.
well. Well, I guess kind of on the same line then, since we're kind of talking about gym kind of states, and you may not even be able to answer this until after the race, but do you think that this race should still be a golden ticket?
Yeah, I think so. I think that either Lake Sonoma or Templier should be among the Golden Ticket races. I think it'd be fun to see a 50 miler among the Golden Ticket races because it would allow an athlete coming from the shorter distances to maybe make his debut or her debut at Western States, which would be would make for a really good story, I think. It would be really interesting to see. And I don't know, like I think just it would definitely increase the competition at our, at those races. Templier is generally very competitive. Like Sonoma, I think, has lost some of the competition that it had back in the days when it used to be a Golden Ticket race. So it's like maybe two reasons. One is to highlight or bring prestige to those races. And then I think it would benefit the competition and like at Western State itself, because it would just allow more people to qualify. And I think like giving people a chance to qualify for Western State even without running a very, very long distance, like another 100 miler, is probably really good also for their health. So I'm like, yeah, in general, I'm always open to expand the opportunities for athletes in every direction that can benefit them.
Yeah. Part of me wishes they would just provide some guidelines and say, okay, we need X amount of races in America, X amount of races in Europe, maybe Asia or something like that. And then, needs to fit this time frame it. And we vote on it. Like, I think that'd be pretty cool to say, like, okay, we need a February race in America. Here's your six options. And then just see what the people choose and it not just be like PTRA or something like that, like let race directors vote and fans of the sport and stuff like that. I think that could be really cool. Well, to kind of wrap up this section, what advice would you give to other European runners? Because you are coming from Italy, considering racing in the US.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Maybe like two
Yes.
or three pieces of advice, because this could be its own podcast episode.
Yeah, good. So I think it's always good to be driven or like motivated by a spirit of curiosity to try and test new things. I think like, so I had to figure out this whole travel like by myself. Like there was no one supporting me or like helping me out with the logistics and the flights and the accommodation, anything. I think there is a lot of learning that comes from that. You just learn to like manage the circumstances and like get through the day. I don't know how you say. And also I think it's important to respect the tradition and the history of our sport. And I think the races that I've chosen to do have contributed a lot to what trail running is today. So for me, that was a very big motivation. And it's, yeah, it's interesting to experience a different style of running and racing than what you can generally find in Europe. I don't like to like generalize or like make categories, because like there's no such a thing as like European races and American races. Like American races are always like fast and runnable and not much elevation gain, and people run bare chest and with the handle flask. Like there is a lot of cliche or like out and back course and pacers and all of that. Some of that is true, but like then there is the reality. Some of the European races are like that. I think it's good not to have prejudice, and be open to try new things and experience a different community, a different culture. There is a lot of value that comes from it. So, yeah, this goes back to the curiosity aspect that I was mentioning, and I really encourage anyone who has the opportunity, who, yeah, is maybe like has the flexibility to do this thing, to try it, because it's very fulfilling.
It's also really exciting for the American athletes to like
Thanks.
have some people from Europe come over. I mean, we see that with the Golden Trail World Series all the time now, but I loved the I just was
It's
imagining Unbreakable or that movie with Killian and Anton when you're talking about shirtless
yeah.
and hand water bottles, classic America.
Yeah, there is some cliche. Also, like, I think, you know, the when the Golden Trail series comes to the US, it's like, of course they are American races, like Pikes Peak Ascent or like Mammoth, but it feels more like exporting the European style competition over to America. So like the vibe, the atmosphere is definitely different than what you can experience at Chaconut, for example. Then I haven't tried Lake Sonoma yet, but I would imagine it's a little different. And it's not to take anything away from the US stages of the Golden Trail series, but when you race there, you feel more like in a bubble instead of properly like immersed in
Nice.
the US trail culture.
Makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I think that about sums that
Thank
all
you.
up.
I
Yeah,
hope
great job.
my English was good enough.
Oh,
Like
no, it's I think
sometimes
it's
it's hard for me to express some concepts and to make myself understood. I don't know.
yeah, no, I get that. Trying to
Yeah.
find the right words that evoke the same emotion. But yeah, like in summary, at least for me, like we're more the same but different. Like, yeah, the scenes are different, but like that essence of like loving the race, loving the running and being in nature is there. And just being open to like slightly different flavors of that. And like MK said, like you being at Chuckanut was like sent tidal waves like through the American community because like we love going to Europe. Like I love going over there and immersing in that scene. But I do also believe like I have that bias that what we have here is really special. And when you have something special, you want other people to experience that too. And like get where me and MK came from, like our origin. Like that those are the races that
Thank
I
you.
started at. And so it's just you just want to share that with the people that you enjoy and love and be like, hey, this is like my home. Like, check this out too. So yeah, I think that's a great summary. We have
Thanks.
one final question. And you know, just going on the trend of Les Templiers, and now you're doing Lake Sonoma. Are you considering doing CCC this year instead of OCC? Because you've done OCC a couple times now.
Just once, honestly, but
Oh, just once. Okay.
yes. So I think this year I'll still go for OCC, not because I don't feel ready for CCC, but I don't know, from like the way that me and my coach planned my calendar, my races, I think it fits better. And I haven't really thought that much about it, but I think this year will be OCC again, and then maybe next year CCC. This also goes back to the thing, to the concept that I was trying to explain, that like this week I want to like refocus on quality and like running fast, or being able to express quality excellence in short distance races. It's not like OCC is like a short distance, but definitely CCC would go more in the other direction. So I'm always inspired by being able to combine different skills, so like running fast for short amounts of times and be versatile enough to handle a long race like a 50K, a 50 mile, maybe 100K. So if the experiment goes well, I think next year can be a good year to run CCC, probably.
Well, we're excited to see how the experiment results come out. I'm sure it'll go great. I think that's so much
Hopefully.
fun. And
Yeah, it'll be fun. I think it will really test my courage, my self-confidence to not do, because like in between Lake Sonoma and the race that I'm gonna do after, I really need to say no to a lot of things and just rest and not run, not train, not push, nothing. If I'm able to do that, I think I can have some fun.
Well, best of luck at Lake Sonoma. This will come out like 1 or 2 days before the race. And then also best of luck at the Italian Uphill Championships.
Thanks.
And thank you for joining us today. I'm sure like the three of us could probably, Danny and I kept crossing questions out because we were like, this is a whole episode. This is a whole episode. But I'm sure we'll have you on again because we just love hanging out with Francesco.
Yeah.
Yes.
I also need you to, I need to have you back on the Running Long podcast someday. But yeah,
We'll
time to
just
time.
take turns, you
I know.
know?
Thanks.
Awesome. Have a good last little sleep before Sonoma, and we'll talk soon.
Talk soon. Thank you.